is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, earthquakes hit the northern coast and police warn skiers to lock up their gear on Cypress Mountain. We'll have all this plus sports and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. Here at UBC, the university has been noted as being the only major university to hold student elections in the winter term. This year, elections will begin on January 14th, and voting will take place during the week of January 18th. An article in Maclean's magazine looked at UBC's election system, in particular, our voter-funded media concept, which was tested last year. The VFM system includes students who form media groups and compete for prizes, which are funded by the students' union. The groups compete to see who can offer the best coverage of the election, and voters will then determine which group did the best job of informing them on issues related to the election. VFM's goal is to both increase election coverage quality, but also make media directly accountable to the voters. Last year, hundreds of dollars in prizes were awarded. The contest will be held again this year, with Simon Fraser University scheduled to hold its own similar contest. Now, with a look at local and provincial news, here are News 101 reporters Tracy Fuller and Leanne Yu.
In spite of Canada's reputation for equality, the Vancouver 2010 Olympics may include an unequal event. Controversy has risen over ski jumping, which may run as an event only for men. In response, federal minister in charge of the 2010 Olympics, David Emerson, announced yesterday that he plans to speak with the Minister of Sports about approaching the IOC to change their decision. The IOC justified their exclusion of women from the sport on the grounds that the women's portion of the sport isn't yet up to Olympic standards, and so it isn't suitable to compete alongside the men's ski jumping. In response to the controversy, female ski jumpers have filed a complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission.
A secret land deal has the mayor of Langley Township on the defense. Mayor Kurt Alberts authorized the sale of 40 acres of land near the Dixon Peat Bog to the prominent Martini family for $2 million, while retaining 29 acres near the bog as a conservation area. This deal, however, was conducted in secret without public notice or oversight. Mayor Alberts asked that judgment on the process wait until all the information is out, at which point, he says, people will be pleased with the deal because it conserves an important part of the Derby Ranch area.
Those planning on hitting the slopes are being warned to lock up their gear. This after a rash of thefts were reported from Cypress Mountain. West Vancouver police say five thefts occurred at the ski hill between December 24th and January 4th. In all cases, the skis or snowboards stolen were left unlocked on racks or in snowbanks. Ski school director Ken Redu notes that thieves appear to be going after the easy target, preferring the grab-and-go routine to stopping to cut a cable lock. Ski hills themselves are also increasingly wary of theft. Grouse Mountain has installed cameras and has a policy not to allow any individual to bring more than one set of equipment down the mountain.
An SPCA shelter in Coquitlam will be shutting its doors after too many noise complaints were made to city officials. The agency says it has tried many options to alleviate the noise from the shelter, which is located on Pipeline Road, but the city is saying it's not enough. SPCA CEO Craig Danielle says the city of Coquitlam has clearly indicated it will take legal action against the shelter if it continues to house dogs. However, Lisa Parks of the city says they haven't ordered the shelter to shut down altogether. Parks says the city has only asked the shelter to remove the dogs. General Manager Bob Bush says the shelter has tried everything from hiring an acoustical engineer to try to solve the noise problems, reduce the number of dogs, and install acoustic panels on walls. He says the acoustic engineer found that passing trucks on the road were in fact making more noise than the barking dogs. Daniel says after 48 years, the shelter will close on July 1st, but will continue to investigate animal cruelty and respond to emergency calls in the area. Three workers will be laid off in the process.
And a poor Coquitlam school is partnering with the cast of Umoja to send 10,000 books to schools in South Africa. When five poor Coquitlam schools were closed last year, their library collections would have ended up in the rubbish bin, but for music teacher Carol Sierani. Saving the books from the landfill, she found an opportunity for the books once designated as trash to make a difference. The cast of Umoja, the South African musical currently playing in Vancouver, was asked if they wanted to take the books back to South Africa. Producer Lucy Hamlet and director Thembi Nyadeni agreed. Umoja will donate $1 from each ticket sold to pay the cost of shipping the heavy books back to Africa. Hamlet explained that the cast was eager to see the books go to their own primary schools, which often have few teaching materials after many years under apartheid government. It's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you care.
You!
Yes, Electro. And I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:09. With more provincial news, here are Carrie Baptist and Marie Bernard.
The ice jam in Prince George has resulted in record water levels on the Jecheco River. Over the weekend, the levels were higher than any recorded in the past 200 years. Officials say a large chunk of ice shifted on the weekend, which resulted in more or new floods. Many residential and commercial buildings in the River Road and Pulp Mill Road areas experienced flood for the second time this weekend. Kevin Brown of Prince George says the city has so far spent $1.5 million in an attempt to prevent damage. A local state of emergency was declared on December 11th. Brown says over 24 homes continue to be under evacuation order. He says despite the severe interruptions the situation has caused, residents seem to be getting used to it. 300 employees of the Winton Global Sawmill were set to go back to work today after it shut down on December 12th, but are staying home because of more flooding over the weekend. With more provincial news, here is Marie Bernard.
Residents of Winter Harbor on Vancouver Island were shaken awake early Saturday morning by the first of two large earthquakes which hit the northwest coast this weekend. According to Natural Resources Canada, the first quake struck around 3 a.m., the second at 3:45 a.m. on Saturday morning. Both quakes were measured at 6.5 magnitude on the Richter scale. Their seismic activity originated from a mid-ocean fault located 225 kilometers west-southwest of Bella Bella between the Queen Charlotte Islands and Vancouver Island. Despite the strength of the two quakes, no damage has been reported and no tsunami warnings were issued.
And in national news, the search continues for missing Australian snowboarder Lee Barnier. The 21-year-old is speculated to have been caught by an avalanche in the parachute bowl of Kelowna's Big White Ski Resort. The slide occurred at about 11 a.m. Sunday. Barnier was last seen a half hour before then by friends. He had told his friends that he was going to do one more run, but did not specify which one he had planned to take. Barnier is of medium height with short brown hair. He was last seen wearing a dark blue ski jacket with red and white arms and dark ski pants. This morning, an RCMP helicopter, police dogs, the Big White Ski Patrol, and local search and rescue teams set out in an effort to find him. No news yet on the result of that search.
And the Federal Green Party is congratulating the National Roundtable on the Environment and the Economy, or NRTEE, for its recommendations that Canada adopt a carbon tax program. The NRTEE released a report this afternoon stating that a carbon tax is a necessary component required to cut greenhouse gases and mitigate the effects of climate change. The report took over a year of research and was commissioned by the government in order to find ways to alleviate climate change. Green Party leader Elizabeth May says that Canada must adopt a carbon tax in order to take meaningful action on the climate crisis. The Green Party is the only federal political party to directly advocate for the tax. She is urging other parties to adopt a similar policy, which includes both taxation and tax cuts. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Stephen Harper and the Conservative government strongly oppose a carbon tax system.
Students attending St. Thomas University are getting an extended Christmas break due to a labor dispute. University President Michael Higgins has announced that classes will not resume on Thursday as planned, but are now pushed back until next Monday. There's no guarantee the university will reopen on that date either, since administrators and the faculty union are locked in a contract standoff over wages and working conditions. Higgins says negotiations with the union have broken down. He says faculty representatives ended talks in order to continue with a strike vote. The university locked out faculty members on December 27th after 10 months of talks failed to produce new contracts for full and part-time faculty. The lockout is unprecedented in the history of labor relations at Canadian universities. The spokesperson for faculty at the university says they remain positive and a return to the bargaining table is scheduled for tomorrow. Representatives from the student union are imploring their professors to vote in favor for the administrator's latest offer and settle the dispute. The students say the university is being fair, while the union seems to be focused more on their own agenda. According to the university, union leaders are demanding a 43% increase in pay over 3 years. Administrators say adhering to that request would force tuition to rise by $2,000 by 2010. Tuition at St. Thomas is currently $4,500 a year. Some students are already talking about getting refunds if the dispute drags on much longer.
And in international news, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service will delay its decision on whether or not it will include the polar bear in its Endangered Species Act. The decision, which has been pending since 2005, will determine whether or not the polar bear is considered a threatened species. The service has indicated that the final decision will be made within a month, but some are lobbying against the possibility that the bear be considered threatened. Safari Club International has been actively involved in the listing process and argues that scientific evidence gathered by the U.S. Geological Survey is insufficient to satisfy standards for the listing. In addition, the club contends that listing the polar bear as threatened will negatively affect imports of legally hunted trophies from Canada. The club also argues that including the polar bear will result in detrimental effects for northern Canadian communities who depend on safaris for polar bears. Many other groups disagree with the Safari Club and are concerned that the climate change crisis will greatly threaten polar bears.
A major power crisis is underway in the Gaza Strip as a result of the Israeli military's ordered fuel cuts, which feed the power plants. FSRN's Rami Almagari has more.
This past Saturday, the fuel shortage in Gaza reached such a low point that the Gaza power plant decided to ration electricity by initiating rolling blackouts that would last anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a day and would last indefinitely. This is causing a great concern among Gazans and particularly among emergency and medical service providers. Here among the incubators at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza lies three-week-old baby Sabreen Douche, who suffers from respiratory difficulties and whose life is now threatened as a direct result of the fuel shortages and subsequent electricity rationing. Dr. Nasser Al-Sadi, chief of the incubator ward, describes the situation in his department.
Once the electricity is cut, this child would definitely die. In this case, also, we cannot deal manually with the other babies as there is a high potentiality of more deaths.
The hospital does maintain emergency power generators, but with the frequent electricity cuts, machines at the hospital work improperly. In another corner of Gaza's largest hospital, there are 200 renal patients suffering from kidney failures whose lives are also threatened due to the power outages that have recently emerged here. Dr. Mohammed Shabat is the chief of the dialysis department, explains the urgency of the situation.
In Shifa hospitals, we have about 200 patients here under dialysis. They are needed for three times weekly dialysis. Electricity here is very important. There's a low cut of electricity several times during the daytime. And at the time the machine, it will be stopped. Many orals it will be happening. During 24 hours to 48 hours, any patient, if he is not doing dialysis during 48 hours, he will go to die.
In October of last year, Israel for the second time drastically reduced the amount of fuel shipped to Gaza. Fuel needed run the sole power plant in the Strip, forcing the power plant to begin daily blackouts. The power plant provides Gaza's 1.5 million residents with 45% of the power supply electricity, while Israel supplies the remaining amount. Dorar Al-Sisi, deputy director of the plant, explains the amount of fuel needed to generate electricity for the region.
Actually, the power plant needs approximately 450 cubic meters per day to produce 80 megawatt on daily basis. Such quantity has been decreased up to 250 cubic meters. The problem could be resolved or solved by the Israeli government only, because they limited the quantity of the fuel which should be provided to the power plant.
The Israeli High Court of Justice ruled in November that a cut in fuel supplies to Gaza would not pose any harm to the civilian population. Israel claimed its actions on Gaza are meant to prevent Gaza militants from firing homemade rockets into nearby Israeli towns. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
And thanks again to FSRN for that international piece. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jeff Sargent will tell us what's happening in UBC Sports. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Holy smokes! I can't believe I'm part of the coolest club in the world!
Bub?
Yeah?
So, what club is that?
CITR. As a club member, I get ginormous discounts on the Friends of CITR card, which in itself, Timmy, I must say, is pretty amazing. I get dirt cheap prices at stores and shots I'm at all the time anyway. To be honest, it feels like being in a club within a club.
Wow. Hey, I want a Friends of CITR card.
You don't even have to be a member to get one, although clearly you'd be that much cooler if you were a member. Go purchase your Friends of CITR card down at CITR, or at special events they sponsor, such as concerts, membership drives, and shindig.
I got it. It feels like having special powers. I go into stores and bam! Discounts.
Tis what I said.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single-parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:22 and time to take a look back at UBC Athletics. Here's Jess Sargent with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
Thanks very much. The UBC women's basketball team returned to conference play on the weekend and came away with a hard-earned split with the number one ranked SFU Clan. Friday night's game saw the Thunderbirds run away with an 81-62 win as the two teams sat tied atop the Canada West Pacific Division. But that would be short-lived as Saturday's rematch at War Memorial Gym was perfectly set up to determine the winner of the season series. The game remained close throughout as SFU led by one at the half. The Ladybirds found themselves down 63-58 late in the fourth when Alex Viewig drew a foul and drained both of her free throws to make it a single possession game. Julie Little then drained a short-range shot to bring UBC within one with 7 seconds left. The Birds then fouled Robin Buna of the Clan, who nailed both of her free throws and restored SFU's three-point lead as the Clan held on for the 65-62 win. Erica McGinnis led all players with 23 points and was happy with her team's effort despite the loss.
It's disappointing. Like, we definitely wanted to come out with a win tonight, and you know, we had this could come down to who hosts the playoffs, so I think there was a lot on the line, but you know, it's just another game. We played really well yesterday and we're really happy with that, and we were looking forward to coming out tonight and we knew SFU were going to come out and do some things differently, and they did, and it was a great game.
Following the loss, the Birds sit just 2 points back of the Clan for first place in the Canada West Pacific Division and will need SFU to stumble somewhere along the way if they wish to grab that number one seed heading into the playoffs. The Lady Birds return to the court this weekend as they host both Brandon and Regina. Friday's tilt against the Bobcats begins at 6 p.m. and can be heard live right here on CITR, while Saturday's match with the Cougars, also a 6 o'clock start, will be webcast at citr.ca. After an extended holiday break from CIS play, the men's basketball team is back in action tomorrow night as they take on the Simon Fraser Clan up on Burnaby Mountain. The Thunderbirds currently sit tied with the Victoria Vikes for top spot in the Canada West Pacific, but their cross-water rivals do have two games in hand. The Birds will quickly make up for their extended break, though, as they'll host both the Brandon Bobcats and Regina Cougars this weekend. Tip-off for tomorrow's game with the Clan is set for 7 p.m. at SFU's West Gym, and you can hear the game live right here on CITR. The men's hockey team was hoping to build on a two-game winning streak begun before the winter break as they hosted the Calgary Dinos for a pair over the weekend. But despite scoring 9 goals over the two games, the Dinos got 14 of their own, sweeping the weekend series and now sit tied with the Thunderbirds for fourth place in the Canada West with 2 games in hand. After a hard-fought 6-3 loss Friday night, the Birds found themselves down quickly in Saturday's rematch as the Dinos came out with a 3-0 lead by the middle of the first. UBC starting goaltender Francois Thuo was chased from the net after allowing 4 goals on 10 shots, but his replacement Jerry Festa didn't fare too much better in the firestorm. Former NHLer Jared Allen, a recent pickup for the Dinos, scored his second hat-trick in as many nights, leading Calgary to the 8-6 win. UBC now finds themselves back at 500 and will be in tough to secure a home playoff berth with Calgary's recent resurgence. Next up for the Birds is a two-game weekend series in Regina against the Cougars this Friday and Saturday. The women's hockey team didn't fare any better than their male counterparts on the weekend as they dropped both of their games against the Manitoba Bisons. The Thunderbirds actually failed to score a single goal as they were shut out both nights by the conference's best defense. UBC goalie Melinda Troy was bombarded by shots, facing 34 in Friday's 4-0 loss and another 30 in Saturday's 3-0 blanking. The Lady Birds are now 4 points back of Saskatchewan for the fourth and final playoff spot in the Canada West and will look to right the ship this weekend as they host the Lethbridge Pronghorns for a two-game series. The women's volleyball team picked up right where they left off before the winter break with a straight sets victory over the Simon Fraser Clan Saturday afternoon. The Birds made easy work of their crosstown rivals, taking the first set 25-10, followed up by 25-20 and 25-15 wins. Marissa Field hit 750 and added 6 kills, 3 blocks, and 2 service aces en route to the victory. UBC senior Jamie Broder said her team came out and played just as they planned.
It was really nice to come in after Christmas and really play solid as a team and have everyone contribute equally. We have such a deep team that it's nice that everyone got a chance to play.
The Lady Birds now boast a record of 9-1 and are tied with the Manitoba Bisons for second place in the Canada West, a position Broder says they'd like to improve upon as the playoffs draw closer.
There's only 3 Canada West berths to nationals, so our league play is very important, so we get a high ranking going into playoffs, and it'll give us an even better chance of making it this year.
And the Lady Birds will try to improve their record even more as they visit the Brandon Bobcats for a pair this weekend. And finally, the men's volleyball team returns to CIS play this weekend as they face the Cougars for games Friday and Saturday. The Thunderbirds are riding a 6-game winning streak and sit tied for second place in the Canada West with the Winnipeg Westmen. Following this weekend's road trip in Saskatchewan, the Birds will return to Vancouver to take on the Thompson Rivers Wolfpack. That's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Jeff Sargent.
And thanks to Jeff for that. We will now wrap up with meteorologist Selena Ferris for your 5-day weather forecast. Selena.
It's going to be a cold and stormy week. A frontal system approaching overnight will bring high winds and rain with possible snow for some areas over the next 24 hours. Tuesday will have a high of 4 degrees. By late Wednesday, another storm will be passing through, causing rain for Wednesday and Thursday. Temperatures will warm slightly with a high of 6 on Wednesday and 8 on Thursday. Conditions will begin to clear by Friday with a mix of sun and cloud and the possibility of some scattered showers. That's your 5-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
And thanks for that, Selena. That's our program for Monday, January 7th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.